Hey, Daryl.
DK, I need a match.
It seems like you got things under control over there.
Everything's under control. It's time for a fire, bro. Time for a fire.
Right? Oh, listen.
This is a disaster.
Go on vacation. All right. Disaster. Leave the garage door open. And,
TK, I'm ready to go in the garage with it closed and turn on the fucking engine, bro. Enough's enough. Yeah.
You know what? Those clips, the Clips channel, the 3 years ago Clips channel. Hard to watch. Guys, go check out the Canadian real estate show Clips channel. First of all, let's just quickly start off with that, Daryl. If you're tuning in right now and your expectations are to be getting nothing but gold, all right, continuously for 1 hour, you're in the wrong place. But if you want to have just bite-sized bits of how great this show is and all the fun things that we're about to talk about over the next hour, check out our channel, Canadian Real Estate Show Clips. Make sure you subscribe. And then you don't have to watch us for an hour anymore if that's a problem for you. You don't have to let us know in the comments. You can just go watch the Clips channel. Problem solved. We solved it. You listened.
Solved.
Problem solved. And if you're just listening to this channel for the first time and you haven't subscribed, by all means, we invite you. Subscribe. Get like, comment. We'll see you every week.
Get her going. So? And if you want to have a party, come check out the Frankfurt Report, because it's just madness over here, TK.
If you're looking for some great entertainment on what is going on in the GTA in many different industries, the Frankfurt Report.
Check it out. Okay.
Provide you that info. We got a great guest today, dude. I'm excited and I want to like get right into it. I mean,
we have a wonderful guest schedule. Well, TK, there's a lot of stuff going on. We got this. Did you know, TK?
No, what? Did I know what?
This is big news, man. Big news. We haven't done this for a while. Popular Toronto strip club could be replaced by a huge condo tower.
Popular? You know what they're talking about? What does popular mean?
Do you know what they're talking about?
No, I saw that though. I would
That's the brass rail, man. The brass rail, Yonge and Bloor.
Yeah, okay. That's why.
Hey, guess what? Guess what? My cousin's wife owns the brass rail, man.
The building.
No. Well, the building and the establishment inside.
Yeah.
It's been a wonderful connection over the years.
I imagine.
Yeah. No, it's not really my thing. But I have had some interesting parties for other people there that I have slipped out of immediately after the festivities began. But anyways, we have Mr. Patrick Franci from RAIN, Real Estate Investment Network of Canada.
Regular member of our show, a regular guest on our show. We're happy to have him back. Let's bring him on and get right down to it.
I'm excited to have him because there's a lot going on. And you know what? I didn't think he'd have much to talk about on this multiplex thing. We got to talk about the multiplex thing, but he's like Mr. Investor. So he's probably got a great insight.
And other
some great examples of it too.
Yeah.
And look at him. Look at this guy. This guy's got like the real professional background. Always looking sharp. Jeez. Yep.
He was in the gym this morning working out, just staying on top
of
things.
Look at this guy. He doesn't even fit in his shirt. Not like me. I got like an extra large t-shirt, so you can't tell how fat I am.
You're a man of many talents, Patrick. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for coming back. Like, we didn't scare him off. This is like the third or fourth time. Love it.
Looking forward to it.
We like chatting with you. What's the update? What's going on with you lately? What have you been up to?
What I've been up to, we've been busy. We launched a couple of, within the real estate investment network, launched a couple of new programs, one called Investor Think Tank and then Incubator, which were kind of cool programs, small, intimate group, get together, kind of solve the world's problems, look at business, look at real estate as a business, look at their businesses as a business, because there's many of them are self-employed. And then it evolved to be a really kind of networking program where we get together every quarter, do some experiential stuff in terms of, you know, getting together in different locations across the country and visiting some real estate stuff and then doing some workshop stuff. So it's a cool program.
Cool.
Fun. That is cool. How do people get involved in that? Like, what's the...
Well, we launched it within our own general real estate, our RAIN community, and then now we're pushing it out. So we're two programs. We launched it as beta in January, and they were just so well received. And so the beta test was around the program, and we called it Investor Think Tank, and then we launched Entrepreneur Think Tank. So really, it's just you can check out anything within the Real Estate Investment Network website, RAIN Canada, and kind of follow that path, follow along with us, and you'll hear all about it.
Cool. Well, that's exciting. Like, so big news here in Toronto is that they've approved this new bylaw that allows for multiplex. I don't know how much you're following this story, but some people here think it's a big story and it's going to help solve the housing crisis. And then there's a lot of money to be made on this idea. So obviously, by my inflection and tone, you can tell I am not a believer. What are you thinking about this? What are your friends saying?
I had come up with a new definition of insanity, which was when we actually believe that the government that's creating the problem is going to be the solution to the problem that they create. So, when I look at any time we consider some of these new programs to fix the problem, then you have to question, can they execute? Will they execute? Will we be able to work through the bureaucracy? So having said that, I'm also working on being, skeptical, not cynical, which is a really tough thing to do these days. But ultimately, I'm looking at it going, okay, we know that trying to crush demand through whether it be interest rates or more difficulty getting mortgages or foreign buyers or whatever that list of things is, that doesn't work.
And that's not working.
You have to address the supply. So this is a way to kind of broaden the supply. And, I think it's a step in the right direction. That's what I think.
A step in the right direction. TK, what did I say when we first heard about this?
Yeah, remember, every time we talk about articles, we go right into it because we all know what's going on, but there's listeners who don't. So let's just explain what expanding housing options in neighborhoods is.
TK, I just want to interrupt. Sure. See, you're a pro at facilitation.
Look at this guy.
You are really considering the listener. And so I commend you for that. Good job.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. So it's only from making many mistakes in the past. So expanding housing options in neighborhoods was introduced by the city back in 2020. I think I first heard of it. 2021, they had a report. We had Greg Ewens on the show who was talking about that. All of 2022, we were waiting around, I think the summer, July council meeting, they had voted in that report and said, okay, it's something that we'll consider. And now recently they have actually passed it with council. There were people who voted against this. I think there was
deferring the idea.
Who wanted more research and stuff. So it's amazing how people are still, fighting.
Need more research.
It
wasn't more research.
Housing supply.
People in their communities saying, we don't want this shit here. Exactly. Right?
So in Toronto, we've got this huge amount of land that the land use designation is only meant for mostly detached, sometimes maybe semis or townhouses. And so we're just looking at, and what the city's decided to do is be able to create more housing options in those particular areas, which would involve duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, and even some small four-story multiplex buildings in those areas that would be the as-of-right zoning use for owners so that they can just go in to get a building permit, make that application, and not have to go through committee of adjustments or hear what their neighbors all think about the pitch of their roof or whatever.
Right. But it's not quite that simple where so... You buy a house, right? And you think, oh, wow, it'd be great to add some units here to help out, with my ridiculous mortgage all of a sudden. I better split this place up. Now I'm allowed to. This is great. But you don't just throw up a couple of walls and plop in a kitchen and a bathroom, right? Like that doesn't just happen, right? So there's a lot of work involved in tying all that shit together. And on top of that, you have to make sure that there's certain sound rules and regulations for construction, as well as fire separation. So what you're really doing in order to do this is gutting the space, because there's no other way. You need like special electrical. You need to make sure it's heated properly. Like it has to have two forms of egress from everywhere. Like there's certain rules that make this not really financially feasible unless you come in and you can do it fresh or you're planning on gutting the place. So like, how does this work and where does it work financially to come in and do this? Unless, of course, you've owned it, I suppose, for 30 years and you have no mortgage and somebody just handed you the key. But this Thursday, May 28th, check it out. I'm going to be hosting a webinar for Cranston Capital. They are one of Toronto's top firms for investing capital in new construction projects. So come check it out. I will post a link somewhere at some point in the link below.
Don't miss it.
Don't miss it.
But Daryl, I think you're walking the line between cynical and skeptical. And I think we have to be a little bit cautious here because I'm trying to look at it not through rose-colored glasses, but as much as I do agree and we look at all those things that you just talked about, ultimately, what's the option? You know, it's one thing to be the guys that bitch about shit and make it all wrong. It's another to step back from it and go, okay, if we were to solve the problem, what would we do? Well, you know, I know what I do. You know, first thing I do is maybe just choke down the number of immigrants coming into the country. I'm a huge fan of immigration, by the way.
Did you just say that we need to choke the immigrants?
Yeah. How about the volume of immigrants coming into town? But thank you for kind of taking that off on a funny tangent.
Sorry.
But the point is this, is that we have no control. It's like the gates are wide open. People are flooding in. We can't handle it. That we know is a challenge. And so, yes, we need lots of immigration. We're not having enough babies, all the stuff that go with that. So that would be one step. But on the supply side of the issue, we have to do something. And this is a step in the right direction. We're skeptical because we also know that, you know, historically, government bureaucracy chokes things down and all of a sudden we have a problem. And then to your point is, where do we get the horsepower, the trades, the skills to do what needs to be done in order to pull this all off? And I'll go on to one last tangent around this is when it comes to supply. I'll go to the other end of the country and get into Alberta, look what Calgary's doing. And I have to say that I'm watching with great interest as they take four or five office buildings downtown for convert them and work on converting them to residential, which will be no easy feat, but they're putting money into it. But do you know what they're doing with that? They're kind of killing two birds with one stone because they're literally taking 1 million square feet plus of office space off the table and adding to the residential side of things. So it's an interesting initiative. I think that if anybody could do it, it will be Calgary. So, you know, there are things that are happening. And again, we can't just sit back and bitch about it. If we have to be able to offer better solutions, that's all.
I agree. The thing is that on the surface, to people that don't understand how things work, they sound like solutions. But when you actually know what it takes to convert a office building, which an office building is built wider and deeper than a residential building more often than not, which means you have all this undesirable, unsaleable space left over in the middle of most of these things. And then like imagine coring the plumbing for all these new kitchens and bathrooms and running all the HVAC for this. Like this is no easy feat. It sounds great, but like good luck to the guy that's trying to make money off of doing it, which is the only incentive to do it. So, I mean, we'll see where that goes. But same thing with these four suites in one house kind of idea. So what do we get? Do we get new subdivisions that are like townhouses full of fourplexes now? Think about it.
I don't think it's that widely spread, but just picture what it would look like over 50 years. You know,
right?
Like laneway houses. Like eventually, every laneway will have.
Where are the prices though? By the time the balance comes,
I'm just saying. Eventually, things. So they have to make changes that are going to help us for the future. So this is just one step in the right direction.
One step.
As people go,
there has to be initiatives. You know, and I think
one small step for man.
Let's put it this way: it's a move forward. Here's how I look at it.
Fine.
Because I'm looking at things through an investor lens, which is most people are looking at it through a first-time home buyer or next-time home buyer lens, and I'm looking at it as an investor lens. So if as an investor, I'm looking at what's going on in the real estate market, you know, what some of the fears investors have, you know, will I have tenants? Will I be able to get it rented out? Will it appreciate? Am I, you know, is the housing in a bubble? You know, all of these questions that investors ask themselves because they're tying up capital. You know, I look at it from an investor point of view and I go, what a great time to be an investor. Although credit is tightening, more difficult to get those mortgages, more difficult to find deals, you know, gosh, I can't cash flow. All of that has some degree of truth to it. But when you get into a level of sophistication, they're all easily worked around. My point is this. Around from an investor point of view, this is a great time to be investing. And given what's going on in the world, given what's going on in the global macro, and when we talk about money and policy and all of the things that are happening, what a great place to put capital, which is real estate. And I'm still a big believer in having that as a part of your portfolio.
Big time. Yeah. And it just adds to that. And I totally agree. I don't think that this is like the end users are all celebrating because they get to go and buy a property that they can convert. It's investors are now going to be motivated. And yeah, some of them are not going to make money, Daryl, but like, what, does every investor make money every time? No, you learn from your mistakes and you grow. And over time you have to figure out those lessons. So we need to incentivize the newer investors to come into the market and try out a few things, work out the kinks like they have in every other city that ever built anything. This is always how it works.
This will
create more rental stock. This will create more options for people, which is the point.
For sure. 100%. Yeah. So, but what it will also do is raise the prices of homes in the areas that have good possible rents in them. Right? Because the investors are going to come in and go, fuck, if I chop this thing into four, put 50 grand into it, which is way low, but that's what the performer will say. I can chop this thing up and I can do this and I can cash flow and boom, I can pay a little more than this guy because, I mean, there's no inventory for the investors to buy. They got to figure out a way to buy something. And so this is what happens. They start pushing out the first-time home buyers again. Right. And you start getting the pitchforks out again for the investors, these fuckers, even though they're the only ones who can buy the real estate.
I've never been a real estate agent who's represented an investor, I can tell. Because investors never want to pay more than anybody else.
No, but it doesn't matter. They have a way to, right? Because they can value the property a little differently and they can buy things that maybe weren't even for sale, right? Because
if they know that another buyer is only willing to pay X, then that's the most that they're going to want to pay. And I think that...
So how do you buy anything?
Your situation, I agree 100%. There will be scenarios that you know, an investor can come in and look at. But for the most part, this isn't going to be the straw that broke the camel's back. This is just one more tool, one step in the right direction, adding a little bit more housing. There, we need 1,000 different solutions to be able to continue to support, which back, just quickly, Patrick, on your point, I was talking to somebody the other day, it was a client. I said, why did you come to Canada? And their answer was because the US said no. And they just made the application and Canada said yes right away.
Like, go get in line at that wall in Mexico. Did you see what's going on there? Holy Jesus.
Yeah. That has been going on for a couple of years at least, you know, more.
Crazy. So hold on. So we're the backup plan, but that's okay. We've already got like a lineup. Like we could bring in 1 million people and there's 1 million more waiting to get into this place for some reason.
That is actually not quite true. I don't know if you've read the most recent data, but
you mean know. I didn't say a pure 100% fact.
demand is down 37%. Now it's still a big lineup. What? The point is that, you know, what's starting to happen is, you know, of course, YouTube and all the rest of it, when you look especially into these other countries, big populations, South Asia is an example, what you're seeing is some Canadians, immigrants that have been here, let's say 3 or 4 years, they're putting out YouTube videos that are getting 1 and 2 million views saying, okay, don't here's come. My experience coming to Canada. Yeah. And they're not painting a real positive picture. You know, if you're going to come, be prepared for the cold, be prepared for the cost of living, be prepared for the fact that you're probably not going to get the job you think you're going to get. And, you know, anecdotally, just so happens, I had a appliance guy in my house yesterday who was fixing my dryer. Okay, so I'm coming in. He's obviously an immigrant. I talked to him and, you know, how long you've been in Canada? 6 years. What have you learned since being in Canada? I'm just being really curious, good guy. And I said, where are you from? Africa. I go, so what have you discovered about Canada? He goes, it's freaking cold in Canada. And he lives in British Columbia. So I said, well, there's other, you know, there's colder cities. He goes, I know, been there. But I said, what else about it? He goes, yeah. He goes, it's really expensive and you don't get the job that you think you're going to get. That was literally what he said to me yesterday. And he went to appliance school, learned how to be a technician. He said it sucked for the first 4 or 5 years. He's recently become a subcontractor so that he can do billing separately and differently. And that he's winning that battle, but now has two kids here and away we go.
It's not the Canadian dream that it once was. Like, no. You know, when people came here 50, 60 years
it's
ago,
not the Canada once was,
right. But it's, I'm not sure. Cause I've never lived in one of those countries. So I don't know. I'm just assuming that in many situations, it's at least better here. And that's why people do want to come, but
they're still here.
I'm also more than open-minded enough to understand that for the vast majority of the world, it's a better life for them in the country they were born in than
for
moving
sure.
here.
Safer.
Right? That's exactly so, right, TK.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there, you know, just from a philosophical point of view, you know, my wife and I do a podcast called Mindset Matters with the Everyday Millionaire. But in that podcast, we just recently dropped a segment talking about a new era. And we are entering a new era. I believe, you know, some will say, well, we're going from the third turning to the fourth turning and all of the rest of it. And there's certainly lots of truth in behind all that. But what we are seeing happening is that we're going into a new era. And that new era is of technology and what's happening in this country and, you know, immigration, all the rest of it. I think we have to be open-minded to not try and being pushing back to keeping things the way they were. How do we look forward and embrace the changes that are happening? And again, I'm not trying to look through a lens of, you know, rose-colored glasses. It's going to be painful. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be hard freaking work is the way I'm starting to see it unfold a lot. And it's freaking people out. But I think we have to embrace the fact that we're going through the eye of the needle in change, and in change in this country, and housing is one of the issues that are showing up. So I don't know where I go with that other than to say I think we got to be really open to this change and entering the new era and see where we can provide solutions.
That's a great segue. I had a question for you about, like, how has investment changed kind of since the pandemic and just in the last year? Like what even mindset wise, risk tolerance wise, like financing wise, what's different now?
Well, of course, you know, if you're getting financing, and TK, you'd know this because you're working with, you know, buyers and sellers, but ultimately we know credit is tightening. We know OSFI's coming in and looking at investment real estate differently through a different lens, getting more difficult to get financing, which is not good for the other problem we have, which is we're low on rental supply. Forget about even houses to buy for new home buyers. I mean, immigrants come into this country and they rent for at least 2 years, at least. And they got to get credit rating. They got to make sure their job's good. They culturally, they don't know where they're going to live. This is for sure data supported. What they need a place to rent. And we continue to limit how much supply is coming on, given that the individual investors, and I'm saying investors, not speculators, investors who are supplying, who are truly being rental housing providers, we're making it more difficult. And most of them are mom and pops, we'll call. And that's like 50%, almost 50% of the supply. So you're making the supply, you're actually creating a block to the supply that could be provided in just the financing side of things. Cash flow is really difficult. So if you're not being very savvy, looking for deals, really digging deep for the deals, you're not going to find those cash flowing properties. And so these are also the problems that are being faced. It's not an easy game to play. So, you know, back a couple of years ago, everybody's being a real estate genius. I'm a genius. I'm making money. And, you know, soon the music stops. And the next thing you know, I'm a real estate idiot. And people are getting caught because they didn't have an exit strategy. They were buying on a speculative, you know, basis.
Negative cash flow.
And yeah. So they're upside down. That actually presents opportunities for investors who know what they're doing. So that's
in your network right now. Have you seen an increase in anybody building purpose-built rentals Is this?
Yeah, some of the more savvy, you know, folks, guys that, you know, people that have been at the game for a while, you know, they're actually looking and they're doing small developments or they're prepping. They're kind of doing some of the stuff that you've been doing, Daryl, where they're bringing deals together, where they're going in, for example, seeing a lot going, you know, something, I'm going to get this rezoned. I'm going to do all of the heavy lifting so that I can get it to a place where I can pass it off to a developer. So there's some of that kind of stuff going on. We've seen a real slowdown in people who are actually investing. They can't wrap their mind around it. They don't have that, you know, things have gotten so expensive that the cost to get in doesn't make sense. The, you know, joint venture on it, then you got financing troubles. So unless you're really committed to growing that financial future with real estate and you can't, you know, if you can see it, you're going to do it. If you can't, in their world, it's too hard to work. You know, most people, so I would say, from what I'm observing, it could be down as much as 50, 60% in terms of mom and pop investors that we deal with who are actually doing deals. Lots of people talking and about
any
it.
Any type of deals. So whether it be purchasing, well, and rentals, yeah, building. So yeah, that's a huge.
And as we all know, there's the other issue, which is supply. You know, where do you find supply? And that's also a challenge. It's not like listings are going off the charts. We're at 20-year lows.
Mm-hmm. So we're always behind with supply, right? Mm-hmm. And we're always bringing in all these people. Mm-hmm. Where the fuck is everybody living? Like, shouldn't there be people like overflowing in the streets with the math? Mm-hmm. Like, are we that far behind that when we bring in a million people, there isn't just floods of people everywhere on the street? I mean, there's people in tents in places, but not that many.
Well, probably more than we even care to talk about or recognize. But, you know, I just had Ron Butler on my podcast. We were talking about it. And he's talking about what's going on in Toronto and, you know, with international students, for example, living in houses that are crammed and walled with blankets, you know, paying $800 a month or whatever it is. So there's a lot of that's going on that isn't hitting any kind of mainstream media. You know, you start to see it a little bit in the background, and of course, you know, we all like to hang out on Twitter. So we start to see some of the stuff there that shows up. But in general, we're not seeing just how bad it is in behind the scenes. So I think it's really bad.
Yeah, there are
Vancouver, Toronto, it gets pretty ugly.
I mean, it has to be not just students, Daryl.
Yeah. So that's a lot of people who are living in homes with a lot of people living in those homes.
With a lot of people
and that
in
they don't have a choice. And they're not even in the position where, like, you know, they could go and maybe just get like a condo or something. Like, these are all these people, in order for them to have housing, they need to be living in with their whole families, for example, yeah, or with other families. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the issue, as you start getting things that are overloaded, which, great, expanding housing and options in neighborhoods would be the perfect solution, yeah, to be able, yeah, to keep people together and do it in a legal, safe way.
Yeah. Right? I mean, the house I used to live in across the street, like, there were so many people in that house. It was crazy. Like, so many cars, so many people. I didn't know who lived there, who didn't live there. If it was a party all day, if it was a casino, I didn't know what was going on. But then even here where I live, across the street, there's like different people coming and going all the time. Like, I don't know how many units are in these things. And I even remember walking around the corner, you know, walking the dog, seeing like the garage was like three units on a house, and like they had side units and ladders going up to a window. Like, it's crazy.
We can't relate to that, but there is that kind of demographic of income that they are left with no choice. They are literally in survival mode and really trying to just say, how do I live? How do I keep a roof over my head? How do I pay my bills? How do I stay ahead? And sadly, when we look at Canada, we're not used to that. This is what's starting to shift and change for Canadians. And we're seeing that certainly escalate over the past 3 years. And we have to look at the source of the problem. And lots of people don't want to get political. I have no problem getting political. The source of the problem is our governments and all three levels of government when it comes to housing: federal, provincial, and municipal. They don't communicate. It's like the right arm doesn't know what the left arm is doing. Then the squeaky wheel always gets the grease in terms of the NIMBYism. And, you know, when I say that, it's the squeaky wheel doesn't necessarily mean the most people. It just means the loudest squeak. So we get this little handful of people that are bitching and moaning about the world coming to an end because they won't be able to park where they used to park and blah, blah, blah. And they get the political grease. So what happens is it becomes politics over policy. That is the mantra. That is what they're talking about in the back room. Who's yelling the loudest? Who's bitching and moaning the loudest? And that's who we're going to look after because we're, you know, we're only ever thinking about election, and it becomes this vicious circle, and it just seems to be getting worse. And it could be the same as always, but just because of social media, it feels worse. I don't know the,
you know about it.
Yeah. You know about it more.
We have
know
a, about it. We have a mayoral election coming up, right? For a reason that's easy to find in the media. And so now everybody's platform that they're coming out with right now is talking about housing, and they're really trying to make this, they're playing the heartstrings, right? They're just, they're talking about things that people right now is a hot topic. So they're
bike lanes.
Yeah. They're trying to make this storyline as to how they're going to bring about change. But you're exactly right. Is in order to get this change, there's three levels of government that need to work together, right? We got 31% of a new construction home going to taxes, right? Like it's insane how much tax needs to be paid in order for a property. I got a site that I'm working on where the guy, he's in trouble, and he's talking about what he's going to do. And his way to make money is to try to, like, you know, fraudulently not pay the HST he needs to, because this new construction housing, like that's his solution in order for him to just to make money on it.
Been
and I'm
there.
Like,
been there, right? Done that. You
know, like this is the type of stuff, right? That is necessary just to make money when you're investing millions of dollars and literally putting your whole net worth on the line in order to be able to get these projects off the ground. And nobody's taking responsibility. They keep pointing the finger. Obviously, the provincial government here in Ontario has been doing a lot of stuff. What's happening with housing out in BC? Like, we've had some pretty significant moves. Greenbelt's being released. I sold a property recently that was just released from the Greenbelt. We've had new measures for you know, density and expanding urban boundaries and stuff like that. Is BC doing anything? Are they worried about those things?
Yeah, BC's always, you know, trying to, again, they're doing some new initiatives. You know, one of the things that we're starting to see, there's a couple of things that we're starting to see unfold. One of which is, short-term rentals. They're starting to really shut those down and free up long-term. That's what their goals are. So, you know, we often say to investors, you know, if your only strategy is short-term rental, you got to be very cautious, because the chances of them changing the rules around that are pretty high. And that's, you're seeing that happen throughout British Columbia. You know, Vancouver, Toronto, they're very similar in the challenges that they're facing, you know, but we see what BC is doing. For example, in, I think it's New Westminster, there is an area of about 70,000 units that they've basically designated all of those units that even if you're an owner, you can't move into them. They are rental only. That's the mandate. That's the rule. They took, and then some other changes that they made was they took condos that said within their strata rules said no rental. So you bought the unit, you had to live in the unit. These were not allowed to be rental units. They come in, they go, no, 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 those rules are done. If you own a unit in there, you have to rent it out if it becomes available for rent. So they're doing those kind of things, causing all sorts of course, ripple effects and controversy around it. And these are things that are going on. So they're making some of those changes just to try and create supply. They've got a housing plan of affordable housing, not too exciting. You know, they're talking about, I think, 700 units over 10 years. It's like, okay, why are we having this conversation? So those are some of the initiatives.
We're BC's little brother here in Ontario. We just copy everything our older brother does after he tries it and perfects it. And so we've got a vacant home tax in Toronto that just happened this year. So lots, like, I know a ton of people who, I know. So and I was always told, and what I read was that in Vancouver and BC, it wasn't effective. But there's a ton of people who've had to be, who that amount of money has been thrown onto their tax bill. And they're, because the rule was if you didn't do the declaration, or of course, if you declared that it was vacant, they charged you the 1% based on your assessed value. So there's a bunch of people who didn't fill out the form. So they got charged. And then obviously the people who rightfully should be charged. So there's a lot of people that I know. And it seems like that might actually do something. Again, just one of the thousand ways to die here. You know, like, how are we going to be able to make this work? That's one of them.
Because they keep working. Trying to crush demand. They're trying to, but let's get clear on a couple of things. I think it's worth noting that, you know, something you brought up earlier, TK, was, you know, 31% of new housing is actual tax, right? So when we look at Canada, when we look at the impact of Canada housing market on our GDP, we are a debt-driven country, full stop. You know, it's no surprise that both the government and residents of this country, you know, the debt now is over 300% combined, right? So we know that. We see those numbers all the time, but nothing is going to change it. But here's a fundamental. Think about 31% tax. Of course, that's after, that's, you're paying that after tax dollars when you buy a house with your after tax dollars of income. But there's then the land transfer tax, and there's all of these taxes that are being driven within the housing industry. Housing makes up a huge part of our GDP in terms of our jobs and the tax that those get paid and all of the thing, you know, the administrative that goes to support it. Think about the government jobs. It's like our economy,
real estate commissions,
right? Exactly. Those darn realtors, and they're getting paid and they don't pay tax. I mean, we joke, but the point is that it drives a revenue. So we keep living into this story that they want to fix this problem. They don't want to fix this problem. They can't afford to fix this problem because where's that revenue going to come from? I mean, I guess they can continue to up income tax, but then that would change the narrative of our governments in terms of, you know, we feel for you. We're, you know, we want you to have more money in your pocket. Like, it's all one giant tax grab, and the housing market is one of the things that support our economy. And it, we think they want to solve it. They don't. They don't. I don't think they ever will.
I don't understand because you got all these countries in the Middle East with oil that have like so much money that they don't even have to work. It's like they, it's so fucking crazy what they do out there, right? It's like, if you can think of it, we can make it happen. It's beautiful here. Come. And they have no taxes. All the money in the world, no taxes, nothing, right? Let's make the longest city in the world, 60 feet wide by a billion meters, right? Like, what the fuck's going on over there? What, why are they different than Canada? Like, we have all the fucking oil. We have all the raw materials. Why are we an indebted nation? We're a third world nation with a big fucking mask over our faces. Yeah. We should be so wealthy. We should be walking around or driving around in our diamond studded Rolls Royces, like, because we were born in Canada. Because if you dig under our ground, you might find some minerals or something that are worth something in your backyard. Like, that's how rich this country is, right? Yes. And what the
this
fuck is
back
going
to,
on?
You know, don't even get me going on this. I mean, it is one of my, it pushes my buttons. Like, it is so ridiculous that we are a country that has everything that the world needs. And if you look at our track record, if you look at our history in terms of exports, imports, well, imports, exports, we import often more than we export. What the hell is going on? Like, how is that even possible?
It's so dumb.
And because of climate change, because of environment. I mean, we have food, we have fuel, we have fertilizer, we have commodities, we have uranium. We've got it all.
Everything. Lithium now. Like, anything that's the buzzword, it's here. Nickel, it's here. Lithium, platinum.
Why aren't we selling it? And why aren't we doing it? And a lot of that has to do, again, with climate change and have the environmental, and we can produce all of those things. Being environmentally responsible, it drives me, it's like so in our face. And I look at our manufacturing, I just looked at numbers yesterday. You know, our manufacturing over the past 15 years has been like, it's like, you know, if it was an EKG, the guy would be dead. You know, it's just, there's nothing there.
What do we even make here anymore?
I don't know.
No, and really?
Housing.
And housing, does that count?
Dollars in research and development, which you need to be. So back to the housing side of things, we're debt driven. We are not a productive country, which is just an absolute crime. And I know there'd be people that go, yes, we are. And they'd have all these examples of it. And I, you can give me all the examples in the world. I just look at the end result. You know, it's like saying, well, we did $4 billion in our business. Well, what was your bottom line? Oh, we were upside down a billion. Okay, well, that's Canada.
Right.
Mm. That makes sense. Yeah. And I think that that's part of the, maybe that's the Albertan in you, is that you've got all the information out there that is definitely, like, the facts are the facts, is that we've had issues with bureaucracy and the province and the federal government screwing over people in Alberta the way they have over the years. And we've got all these different resources. We've got China owning different mines We've got different mineral rights that aren't ours anymore, that don't belong to Canadian corporations that we've got to struggle with. What do you see like in the geopolitical world then? Because Daryl kind of brought up the those countries like, I guess, Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure what that accent was, Daryl, but it was
that was my Dubai accent. I don't even Dubai. Know okay, what, so
he's
what
Arab,
that
right?
That's my like
with BRICS, what's going on right now with having the Chinese yuan being part of the global currency. Like, how are you seeing that as a, you know, geopolitical type of topic?
You know, it's hard to paint a fun picture. It's hard to paint a positive picture. I think, again, we are going into that new era, and not just as a country, but globally. You know, we talk about it going from the third to the, you know, fourth turning. I think we're in, you know, some portion of that, and, you know, some degree of that is happening. When I look geopolitical, there's all sorts of, I guess, views of the world. I think that China has played Putin, and I think that the war that China has played it, you know, the art of war classic, and Ukraine and Russia war is just a proxy of a war between China and the US. That's what I kind of look at it as. And I'm not saying I'm right, just how I view it and research and some of the people that I listen to. And I've listened to a lot of it and lots of different views. When we look at what's happening on the oil side of it, I know oil's down right now, and everybody thinks that, you know, inflation is kind of under control. Interest rates have, in my view, very, very little to do with controlling and managing inflation. What's happened in this case is that interest rates coincided with oil prices coming down. I think this is going to be a break. I think by the end of the year, you're going to see much higher oil prices and much higher inflation as a result of oil prices. So that's my view and kind of when I look at it. So geopolitical, we see, you know, UK, we see Europe, we see what's happening in China, Russia. We're going through a whole transformation. And then we have, you know, then you look at monetary, US is a reserve currency. Are they going to lose that status? Maybe, you know, at some point they will. It could be years down the road.
Not in our lifetime, in my opinion.
Yeah. Maybe not in my lifetime, because I'm an old guy. I think probably in your lifetime, TK, probably.
Thank you for pointing out, TK.
So glad that
fucker.
You said my name first. Yeah.
Yeah, because he was skipping over me. He's skipping over me here.
Yeah. You mentioned third and fourth turning in between. Can you explain that to me? Just what?
Well, you know, you, there's no easy explanation. You have to read the book, The Fourth Turning, and you start to see just where we're going, from monetary policy to collapse to the transition into technology and what's happening right now. And, you know, it really is a shift at a global level of what's happening. So read the book, The Fourth Turning. It is dry. It is a tough slug to read. I tried listening to it. That didn't work. And sadly, you have to read it. But that was my, you know, I'm not the smartest, you know, knife in the drawer. I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. So it takes me a little while to absorb that stuff. So,
okay.
But let's put it this way. We are at a global level going through huge changes. And Canada is not going to escape those changes. I think we're in about the best place. Lots of people talk about leaving Canada, getting the hell out of here and going to some other country. There's no escaping it. You know, you have to really look at and say, what is the best country to live in? It's all going to be at the effect of it.
I think there's younger countries and older countries, age-wise, like for real. Like we have the United States and Europe and the UK, like these are old men hanging on to power as best they can. They've fucked up their countries. Everyone underneath them hates them. It's chaos all over the place. While younger nations that are all on the same page are now teaming up with each other, outnumbering us considerably and outsmarting us considerably. And they have that youthful drive and kind of gung-ho thing that the old guys don't have. The old guys are puppet masters playing with their money, manipulating everything, while these other guys are just going to come and steamroll over this thing. And we're not going to have a choice. And maybe it will be a currency used by many still, this US dollar, but it won't be the currency. It was the currency. You couldn't buy oil without it. Like you couldn't. Now everybody is buying oil without it.
I agree there's going to be options, but just the amount options. Of the amount of like what's the amount? Isn't it like 87% of the world's commodities are traded with the US reserve currency? Like it's a pretty crazy number. Yeah.
Now.
So that's why I'm saying like it's going to take a while for that number to start coming down as people no longer want to use the US dollar.
Well, right. I think there's a couple aspects to it that we got to think of, which is in the country. So when you look at BRICS, you know, and you start to realize that a lot of what's happening right now is that they're starting to create their own trade amongst themselves, right? You know, and they're cutting out US in those terms, and they're starting to use their own currency to trade oil, to your point, as an example. But there's so much debt that is owed to the US in US dollars, of course. And so it takes a while to work through that. The fundamental difference is that when you consider, we'll use China as an example, could use Russia. I mean, the history of those countries is they think long term. And so now what's happening is the divide between East and West grows. The strength between BRICS nations is expanding. I mean, I don't know how many countries are now lined up to be part of it, including Mexico, which is very interesting, given that Mexico has their trade agreement with US and Canada. Yet they're saying, when you know, let's rip up this agreement, or when this agreement's done, we're going over there. That could be saber rattling. That could be just a threat. But that's a game that's being played. So to Daryl's point that we can't step over is these countries have young men. And so when you do get the releases of videos and stuff, you're seeing rioting in the streets, you're seeing real big battles. And those are because there is a youthfulness there of, you know, 25-year-olds that are just fired up. And they want to fight. They're looking forward to it. They're going to fight for whatever they stand for. Those are things that don't tend to happen to the same degree, you know, in Western countries. So
yeah, they're hungry.
And, you know, certainly UK, to your point, just a bunch of old guys.
Really. Yeah, but they're hungry. Like, literally, they're hungry and they're hungry, right? Yeah. Like, these guys are going to fucking take over. And they have Starlink. Like, they don't even have to lay any cables or infrastructure to join the internet. Like, this is next level. Like, they're going to go so fast. It's crazy.
Yeah.
People don't get it.
Did you guys happen to see what happened to Sri Lanka over the past couple of years? Did you guys follow that?
I saw some videos recently, but not anything.
No, okay. So this is a classic example of what's happening. So we look at ESG, you know, environmental, societal, and governance, and the need to be environmentally on point, you know, getting rid of fertilizer. I mean, it's just the most ridiculous thing. Something that our federal government, by the way, is trying to tell our farmers here in Canada, which is just ridiculous. I won't go there, but let's put it this way. Sri Lanka as a country, their president, this was a few years ago, like let's say 5 or 6 years ago, I don't know exact time frames. He goes, we're going to implement this whole environmental thing. We're going to, you know, live by the rules, and we're going to cut back. Now, Sri Lanka is an island. It's like 36 million people, whatever it is. They have this like idyllic life, right? It's like a beautiful, beautiful place. President comes in, goes, you know, we're going to quit using fertilizer because that's climate change. It's a responsible thing to do. And they got 40 to 60% less yield. Then that was 1 year. The next year was 80%. So he started starving his freaking country out. They had to try and import food, couldn't afford to do it. Now, the whole country melted down. Like, literally, they ran the president out of the country on the rails. He escaped on a ship or some stupid thing. They burnt down, you know, parliament, you know, ministers of parliament. They burnt their houses, burnt their cars. And now today it's an absolute cluster screw. Like, it's a mess. Can't get fuel, lineups, all the rest of it. They have just totally shut down. Now, go back a little bit more of that story. Here's what happens, and you are going to start seeing it. And TK, you probably or maybe more aware of it as you're doing deals. So Sri Lanka goes to the World Bank or whatever they go to get money. And World Bank goes, yes, we're happy to lend you as much money as you want. It's conditional. You have to fall into these eco regulations and rules. So he went 93% ESG compliant in order to get the money for the country that he wanted. This is kind of Cole's notes. Well, 93% compliant. He starved the country out, and it's totally melted down. We're not being talked about that. But when you go to get financing now, on some commercial financing, you're starting to see the terminology around ESG, and that becomes conditional in terms of getting that loan. So a little bit long-winded, but I think these are all things that are happening in behind the scenes and the changes that we have to deal with.
So I got another quick story for you, and that's this is a client who sells carbon credits. So this is somebody who deals with major corporations and is planting trees all across the world. I'm sure maybe even some in Sri Lanka, I don't know, but all the countries that you can think of where there's lots of farming going on, because these major corporations, in order to be able to meet their climate carbon credits, have to be able to provide a certain amount. And as of right now, guess how many available carbon credits are today? How many could you buy if you wanted to right now, Daryl?
None.
Zero. Not for more than one reason, but the main reason would be because there aren't any.
There are
any
none
left.
Available. There's Hold none on left. A sec. You can plant a tree and get a carbon credit
10 years
sell
from
it
now.
To somebody else?
Yes. So this is a business model
That's
that
cool,
some guys
man.
Are doing.
I got trees everywhere around
is
here.
Is that they are planting today with today's trees so that in 10 years they can sell those credits for a lot more money. Now, if you buy the rights to those credits today, it's not, you know, it's worth only so much because you got to wait 10 years for it.
There's but a futures market on tree credits?
The future, exactly.
Shut the fuck up. Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
If you sell the carbon credits. If you don't follow E.B. Tucker, follow E.B. Tucker. He's pretty... Like he's an entrepreneur, you know, on steroids, but he's literally launching a whole business around that and a whole business model. So it's lots of good insights and information there.
But here's how the carbon credit market works is we're not really sure how many credits you're going to get for those trees. You might get some, you might get none. I don't know. But if you don't buy the credits off me today, I may not be able to sell them to you later. So sorry, I couldn't give you too much clarity, but this is the market. And of course, the big companies are.
You know, we like to throw the elitists under the bus, you know, about all flying their private jets and Trudeau off, you know, flying around in his private jet and yet talking about climate change. They justify it, by the way, by saying and talking about how many millions or billions of dollars that they spend on carbon credits. So, you know, that's how they justify the, you know, they're offsetting their and justifying their flying around. Given that they are spending billions on carbon credits. So they're still saving the planet.
We don't want to fly last. We don't want to change our business models. We don't want to start mining those coals
don't do
in
it
the Congo. But what we'll do is we'll plant some trees in a part of the world that probably would have had trees anyways, getting there eventually.
Little
but
Xanax.
We're going to take credit for those trees.
A little cocaine.
So that you guys
get the right mixture
hang us
going
and
on
cancel
here.
Us on Twitter. Yeah.
The fuck is going on? So instead of making them do it right, they just diversion. And somebody's making all kinds of fucking money.
So what's now coming is so there's water credits, there's other mineral credits.
What does this mean? How do you make money off of a water?
The same thing. I'm gonna pollute Lake Ontario. I'm gonna actually destroy this lake. But there's some river out in Africa that I'm gonna put this filter on, and I'm gonna clean it up really nice. And this is you're gonna get credit for that, so that I can damage the water here because hey, that's how it works. Net zero.
Let's go buy some acreage like that used to not be worth anything because it's full of fucking trees and you can't do anything to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're
sell the
million,
credits.
They're talking, I agree. They're talking millions of Let's acres, go. But then you got the farmers and everything like that. So they're making partnerships in these communities to be able to help the local people. And then because you need somebody to be, you
we
know,
need a
managing
fund.
This all the whole time.
We need to raise a fund. This is
There's
a great
business
idea.
Have you flown anywhere? I mean, they're already starting to make note on your flight passes, your carbon footprint, I think it is. I don't remember the exact wording, but anyways, these are all things that are coming forward. There is no choice in this matter. It's all moving forward. And so this is all part of the change. That
perfect segue to CBDCs. Let's talk CBDCs. Now, hold on a sec. These fuckers... Where is it? Hold on a sec.
But it's so convenient. It'll be so easy. We're doing it anyways, Daryl.
We're doing it anyways, but we're going to launch a public, what are they calling it? They're launching a public consultation on CBDCs. So
our viewers,
who are they
don't
consulting?
Know what CBDCs are, Daryl?
What are they? Central bank digital currencies. Did I get it right? Central bank digital currencies, right? So this is basically like Bitcoin, but issued by
governments. Don't say that. That's not the case.
Cryptocurrency issued.
Don't
blockchain.
Daryl, quick.
I got a debit card. I already have that.
I know.
It's not the same.
The control? Do you want me to get to the control aspect of things and how they're going to monitor your score?
No, no, no. CBDC is a bank-controlled monetary system. It's got nothing to do with Bitcoin.
Don't
nothing.
Tell everybody.
Zero zip. It's not the same secret. In any way, shape, or form.
It's a secret. Don't tell everybody. But this is crazy, right? And this ties into what you're talking about. Like you just said, it's not a choice. Well, guess why it's not a choice? Because you want some of this currency that you can actually use places? Guess what? You got to trade in your money for a CBDC, baby. And when you have CBDCs...
You know, this is an interesting one, you guys. You know, TK, I don't know how you view it, but so I've got nieces and nephews that are in their late 30s, just kind of hitting that 40 crest. So I'm family function. We're having a chat. It's like, oh, you guys, you know, so what's your thoughts on CBDC? They literally said, what's that? Now, these
what's
are
that? Sure.
They're quite accomplished in business. They're doing very, very well in their life. They're not sure. I go, central bank digital currency, like, you know about that? And they're going, kind of, yeah. No, I don't think so. They have no idea. And so I start to explain it. You know what their first reaction is? We're doing it anyways. We're just, you know, we use our bank card. We never use cash.
TK just said that. TK, that's TK's first reaction. That's most people's first reaction. I'm on the internet. They're following everything I do. Like, everybody knows this, but it's different.
TK, So TK, when you said that, do you know the rest of the story, or like, were you just saying, or were you kind of?
I know that that's a common thing that people said. So I said it sort of tongue in cheek.
That's how I heard it, Daryl. I think TK's.
I know TK. TK
is up to speed with what's going on.
He is. So he likes to press buttons, TK. He's a real fucker, this guy.
Today, apparently.
Trudeau pushes my buttons. I'm just saying it right out loud.
Yeah. So I don't think that's uncommon. Patrick, I think that that's sort of what it is. And I think Daryl's comments too about the crypto comparison is another common thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is that people are feeling. And I think that the central banks are disguising this currency as a form of decentralized currency in order to be able to get some people to be more supportive of it.
Can they actually use the word decentralized in that?
How did any of the cryptocurrencies say it? Like, other than Bitcoin, that's got this fake guy that made up the damn thing, and they don't know. Like, every other decentralized currency, like, somebody fucking owns that company, right? That is as centralized as you can get. Yeah. Is it the same center that we're used to? No, it's a different center. It's got, like, a little bit of caramel in it. But it's the same, right? It's the same. It's just another fucking scam. But this one's different because it's been implemented by the ruling class or the rulers or whoever's running the fucking show. They're the ones that are backing this thing. And it's not that it's faith in the currency that will back it. It's if you want to fucking use money, if you want to buy chicken, right? If you want to buy anything other than with some black market, you have to have a CBDC. That's how it's just going to be. And to get the CBDC, you have to trade in the old currency. That's just how it's going to be. So now what? Right? Now you get into the tax collections. Even forget all the conspiracy shit. You can't pay cash for anything anymore, right? How are you going to pay cash for things? If you
And the thing about this is, you know, we can talk about this is not conspiracy in any way, shape, or form. I mean, they're already doing it in China. Millions of people. You cannot live in China without that phone. Like, you can't do anything. And there is I wouldn't say zero, but virtually no cash happening. You can't enter buildings. You can't do anything, go anywhere. You live by your phone. And it right to the point where you get a red code or a green code. That's it. And so it literally, and this is easy to research, by the way, CBDC, you're in some parts of China and you jaywalk. I'll use this as an example. And they also use a little bit of UBI, which is universal basic income, right? They also do that gain. But within that world, I'll use this as an example, you jaywalk. You know how many CCTV they have, right? Like cameras everywhere.
Why would you?
Boom, facial recognition.
Facial recognition. Yeah. They publicly shame you, like your face goes up on the big screen, whatever building has happened to be there. But guess what? They debit your account immediately for that amount of money immediately. and you get a knock on your social credit score. So my wife and I spent time in China, and so we, you know, we actually had an experience with a friend of ours who is from Canada, worked for Cirque du Soleil. She wanted to come visit us in Shanghai because we were there for 10 days or so. She goes to get on a train, a bullet train, tries to buy a business class ticket because that's the way you want to travel over there. It's not all that expensive, really. She couldn't buy a ticket. Anyways, long story short, she finally got to the why that was, why it was grayed out when she went to buy the ticket. She had a social credit score knock on her because she'd had some challenges with the bank there and raised her voice or got frustrated, whatever that was, bing. And so she could not buy a business class ticket. That social credit, by the way, she's from Canada. By the way, how do they even know that? They have facial recognition of her, probably from her passport, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. And they're not only just facial recognition now, they're gait recognition. So how you walk is what they're picking up on. So all of this is really happening. It's already there. It's already, you know, it's rolling out. It's not, that's not.
Oh, yeah. They've had that for a while. Yeah.
They've had it for a while.
The social credit score. That's
so. You mentioned that you had a client that was thinking about using the HST or not remitting it, right? To have some money left over after they sell the deal, right?
Yeah.
That won't happen. Like, that won't be an option, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so you have entrepreneurs and you have self-employed people collecting HST every day and not remitting it when they're supposed to. You have people that don't remit their income taxes all the time. Companies that don't. This will no longer be an issue for these people. Like, it's just going to be gone. It's out. It's gone. Right? Think when you can't manipulate sometimes when you remit your taxes, a lot of people would have gone bankrupt. Like, a lot of people would have gone bankrupt. That's one tool that people can use sometimes when you're in a pinch, right? So that changes things drastically when people that are in a pinch, because you're always in a fucking pinch in Canada. I mean, we started the show saying we're the most indebted nation on the planet, or one of, right? Like, the CBDC thing will change things in a way that we can't even comprehend right now. And when you add on top of it, AI replacing jobs in a way that we can't even comprehend right now. And like, we're already talking. We don't even know how bad the housing thing really is. I mean, we're three white guys. We don't know what's really going on in the underbelly of the real estate market. It's not going to get better as housing gets more expensive and supply gets more constrained and oil goes up and everything's going to be crazy. How do you navigate through this craziness? Well, because we don't have choices, right? Like, they're passing bills left, right, and center on us. And we're all just like, hey, let's talk about it on YouTube. Let's not do anything.
I think there's some real serious issues that are going on. You know, first and foremost, I want to say this is that we can look at this and it's all very dark and all very negative. And, you know, that's a tough place to hang out in. I think we have to look at it and go, what is the opportunity in all of this? I don't know the answer to that question, by the way. To your point around CBDC, it not only controls taxes and how you pay taxes, it will, in fact, control what you eat and what you can't eat. So back to the conversation around carbon and carbon credits and, you know, meat is more than, you know, vegetables. And, oh, I see that your meat's a little bit up. No, you can't buy more meat this week. Like, it is really going to that extreme. So that's on that one side of the control component of it. I think we have to look at the AI conversation, Daryl, is that, you know, I'm old enough to be around when computers, you know, a big computer was like a half a gig. Like, that was giant. I remember in one of my businesses, you know, my IT guy came in and goes, you'll never need more than this. It's a full gig, you know, of hard drive. And I'm going, wow, holy cow, you'll never need more than this, right?
Next month.
The point is that we all thought computers were going to take our jobs and wipe it all out. And of course, you know, many years later, we start to learn that it created a whole new industry, which is, I think, what will happen with AI. I think we just have to watch it play out. But to your point, here's the fundamental for those.
It did wipe out industries simultaneously, though. Like,
it's good. I'm not saying it's not going to be painful. I think it's going to be very painful. This is the new era. I keep going back to that. It's going to be ugly. I think it's going to be messy. It will be. here's the thing. If you're watching this channel and as us three, even in our view, what we're doing is we're looking, we're being aware, we're trying to do all we can to gather the information we need to make smart decisions. How do we look after our capital? How do we kind of push back where we need to push back? How do we hide out from some of these things maybe? But the point is that for anybody watching this show, it can seem pretty dark and desperate. I don't want to position it that way. I think we, from my point of view, if we get people's awareness to say, pay attention, stay the hell off mainstream media. Don't waste 2 minutes watching talking heads scripted. It's like a waste of time. These shows are far more impactful because we take the time to do the research. We dig a lot deeper than most people do. And that's kind of my little rant there.
Beautiful. And we're not making any money on this show. So nobody could possibly pay us to be able to say what they want us to say. So this is how it works. Patrick,
this is a perfect time to talk about our sponsor.
Our sponsor.
I'm just joking.
Yeah, that was it. It's over. But Patrick, we could honestly do this all day with you. I mean, you've been on a few times. You're going to be back again in the future. I don't know when, but we're going to be inviting you for sure until you say yes. But we really appreciate you. Where can people find your podcast? Because you got a great show as well.
You know, my audio is theeverydaymillionaire.ca. And I just launched kind of my YouTube channel and getting some legs. As you guys know, it's a lot of work to get those legs. But hey, listen, I think I'm getting Daryl. I had him on my show and I think I'm getting him uploaded. I think I'll attract hundreds.
Four more people. You might get our whole audience.
But the audio podcast is really, really strong. It's 7 years in the making. I'm hitting numbers now, you guys. I know this is a little bit, you know, kind of, I guess, boasting a bit, but, you know.
Boast away.
I'm getting to like 40,000, 45,000 listens, you know, every
that's
month
killer.
On my audio, on my podcast. So that's awesome. Kind of cool. I just
that's
started.
Awesome. I don't even know 45,000. I've never met 45,000 people in my life. To be able to reach that many people in a month.
Think about it.
It's incredible, right?
Yeah. It's a and fucking baseball content, stadium so. Full of people.
Yeah, that get to hear
yeah,
what you
I
have to
do
say.
That every month, so it's kind of cool. I don't know awesome. What it all means.
Am I on that?
I figured out how to monetize it, but it's fun, and I still dig it, and I get to meet really cool people. And what's interesting about all this is, you know, the cool people that I'm attracting. I now have a lineup of people wanting to be on the show, and that's fun. I mean, some really cool people. So
that's for awesome. Sure.
Am I on the audio version? Did
yes,
I make
you're
it?
On the audio. You're not going to go. You nice. Go a week.
Tune in.
Nice.
Yeah, tune in.
This will be up before that.
Yeah, yeah. I know. You guys are way more efficient with your editing.
Far more efficient with our editing, TK. You hear that? Beautiful.
I knew it all along.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, guys.